I'm LaFern Cusack, senior producer here for Promax PDA, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. If you are an animation connoisseur and you spend your extra time on the weekends watching Adult Swim's The Venture Brothers or Black Dynamite, Disney's XD, Motor City, Disney's Kirby Buckets, Fox's Son of Zorn, and Nickelodeon's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, then you are very fond of Titmouse because they make cartoons. And Nico and the Sword of Light, which is the first Amazon original to win an Emmy for Outstanding Children's Animated Program for the pilot before the series launch, it premieres just in time for Comic-Con July 21st. And today I am speaking with president and owner of Titmouse, Chris Prynoski. Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for joining me.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm so excited for Comic-Con to be happening, and I know that I'll be there as well as you, and you're going to be in a huge camper trailer. Is that right?
Yeah. We drive around in an RV. It's good. It's air-conditioned, and we've got some beer, cold beer, and cold water, so you should come and hang out with us.
Yeah. Now, this is going to be my first Comic-Con, so I'm really, really excited about this. Now, you and your wife, Shannon, you guys started Titmouse. Can you talk about what your business model was built around?
Oh, yeah, sure. We didn't have one, so it was easy. Like, we just, it was built around me taking on too much freelance work and basically Shannon having to figure out the way to get it done. You know, she was producing some commercials at the time, and I was working at Cartoon Network full time, and I was also repped as a commercial director. So I would get these jobs, and then we'd be like, "Man, how am I gonna finish these?" And she's like, "Well, let's rent a little space and hire some of your friends to help finish them." And then that just kind of grew, and now we have like 500 employees. It's crazy.
Oh my God. Yeah. And you guys do so much. You do what? Branding, IDs, CG. What else do you do?
Yeah, we just did a Nike spot that aired a couple weeks ago. We just did a Jay-Z video that came out last week. Do video game stuff, a lot of TV shows, the movie stuff, anything that needs cartoons.
Yeah. Yeah. The Jay-Z spot, I was floored. I was like, oh my God. Because I didn't read the background on it, and then I saw it, and I was like, ugh, I still don't know how I feel about it. I know it just got my heart when I saw it.
Yeah, that was a crazy one. You know, we the mill did the pre-production on that, and we did the character animation, and we didn't really know what it was going to be until it showed up, and it was something we definitely had to keep very secret, because you don't want any of those images leaking out of context.
Mm-hmm. So, Chris, can you tell us how you go about choosing a project?
Yeah, you know, we're in a good spot now where we turn down a lot of work and we can, like, choose a little bit more. And yeah, we just try to think of if there's something we can really sink our teeth into it. You know, if it's going to be, like, you know, we try not to do too many jobs where we lose money, but we're not... like making money is not the main decision in choosing jobs. It's more if, like, if we think the concept is really cool, or if it's really funny, or if there's, you know, if we can make the animation really good, if there's some creative hook, if there's a creative reason to do it, that's generally our primary decision-making factor.
What has been most fulfilling for you? Is there a project that just stands out in your head?
Man, there's a lot of them. I'm trying to think. I mean, Metalocalypse was the first series we did, and I was still very much on the ground. Like, I was still directing episodes and, you know, supervising, producing on that show. So it was that one I felt like I was very proud of, and I thought it was really funny. And we really got to contribute to that, because Brendan and Tommy, when they brought that, didn't have an art style. You know, it was very, very much up in the air. John Schneff had done a couple of character designs, but... I think that one was really fun, because we were a much smaller studio. We were about 30 people back then. It was like kind of all hands on deck on that show. It's a lot of fun.
How has the industry changed in regards to animation and technology since you started?
Well, we used to draw on pieces of paper, and then I mean, we started after, like, you know, they still weren't like painting cells and shooting under a camera. It was still a lot of computers, but used to draw on on pieces of paper and scan them into the computer and color them and composite them that way. But now you don't even use paper. You just draw everything on the computer, on computer screens. That Cintiq, which is the device that we use to draw, it's a, you know, a particular type of a tablet screen. It's like a high-end artist tablet. That thing changed everything. Once those were like readily available, you know, we got some in 2004 when we were barely even a studio. That's, I kind of give actually our hard start as a studio at 2005. And we were like early adopters of that. Now it's the industry standard to use those for everything.
When you got on it, was it easy to adapt?
Kind of. I mean, for some things, yes, but there wasn't really a pipeline that existed for that type of work. What's good at the time, we were doing a lot more commercials or main title sequences, you know, like station IDs, things that were short form projects. So they're those kind of projects, you don't have to build out a whole series pipeline. So we got to experiment a lot on things.
And in that experimentation, how did that help you as an artist?
Oh, I think those kind of jobs are really good for, you know, just exploring different techniques and trying out different things. And like every time, you know, commercials and music videos and stuff they're generally hard jobs, but they usually, you know, demand a unique style. So it always helps you level up and increase your like bag of tricks of things that you know that will work and not work in animation. It helps all your TV series work and whatever you're doing. So I like those kind of jobs. They're fun too, and they're over quick.
Yeah. Well, so what do you think your, if I can say, a technique of animation? Do you have your own technique?
I mean, I think, you know, we have like, we don't really have a house style. You know, we do all different kinds of work, but I think we have like a house sensibility that's hard to describe. You know, we just try to infuse something, stuff that we like in there, in the tone of the show, in the art, and in every aspect of the cartoon. As far as a technique, like most of the work we do is 2D animation, like hand-drawn animation, you call it, although now we draw on the computer. Although we do some jobs. We do short jobs in CG, and we're doing one series that's a CG job that's like, you know, fully computer generated, you know. That one's a preschool show for Disney.
Oh, that's cool. Now, with Nico and the Sword of Light, what did you guys do with that? What was that? What technique?
I mean, that's a hand-drawn 2D technique, but there's a lot of like, you know, fancy compositing and effects work. And even the shows, almost every show that we do, even if it's a fully presented as a 2D hand-drawn show, has some 3D models in it. Like we'll do that for, you know, big vehicles or robots or like monsters or sets, like things like castles or things often we'll model so we could do fancy camera moves or move them around. If it's something that's very hard to draw, generally technical things are easier to handle in, you know, if they're modeled in CG, and organic things are, you know, easier to draw. I mean, there's exceptions, but that's the general rule. So Nico is mostly 2D, but it has some 3D elements in it.
It's beautiful.
Oh, thanks.
I love it. And my son, he watched it like 10 times over the past week. He's like, Nico!
Well, on Thursday, he's going to be able to see a bunch more of them.
Oh, he's so excited for that. So tell us how this Emmy Award-winning project, how this got to Amazon.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we were aware of it. You know, I'd seen, you know, the creators created a Kickstarter campaign to do a motion comic based on this. And, the motion comic was really cool and got on my radar. It's like, oh, that's a cool motion comic. And I didn't think much about it other than being a fan of it. And then I got a call from one of the Amazon execs. It's like, hey, we just optioned the show. I think you guys would really be into it. And once we heard about what it was, I was like, oh, we're already aware of that. And we got along really well with the creators and with Amazon. And I think we're able to, you know, really contribute to what the final look of the show was and the tone of the show. And, you know, that's basically how it came together. They brought on a showrunner that Amazon hired, but we had worked with before, Rob Hoagie, who really was instrumental in figuring out how the storytelling would work. in it. And, you know, just happened like I think like many of our shows do. Then you dig in and you figure it out. Make it, draw it.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of people that are like plan, but it sounds like you and Shannon, when you first started the company, you were like, okay, let's just do this. Do you find that a lot of the projects you have or that you're doing, you go in with that sense of knowing, but also being free enough to explore other options?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely go in with way more of a plan than we used to. So, yeah, but, you know, every production is different and everything, you figure stuff out. I mean, if you're lucky enough to do a pilot for a series, you figure out a lot of things during the pilot, and then you can apply what you learn towards the series pipeline. But a lot of times now, you know, you're talking about technology lending to, like, changes in the animation industry. There's a lot of more work we're doing for, like, digital distribution, you know, new media companies like, you know, Netflix and Amazon. And, you know, a lot of the series work we've done has gone direct to series. When you don't have a pilot, it's a lot. Or actually, Metal Apocalypse, the first show we did, there was no pilot. We went direct to series. And that was that was pretty hard to figure out. The first three episodes were definitely a lot of work. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Yeah, how do you handle that? How do you handle that stress of needing to get, you know, all these shows in and then still trying to stay creative?
Yeah, that's the balance, you know, because it's the task of getting the shows in. It's not easy, but it's easier than it used to be because we've got, you know, a reputation for doing good work. And also there's a lot of work out there right now. There's a lot of animation being produced and it all needs to be produced somewhere. And, you know, Disney and Nickelodeon, DreamWorks, Cartoon Network have studios, but most of the other networks don't. So they need someone to produce them for them. And
right.
One of those ones. You know, as far as being creative, that's the harder part. You know, I just pick and choose the jobs that I'm going to be creative on. I'm not on the ground on any one of them at, like, all the time, you know, mm-hmm. So I'll generally maybe direct one project or maybe be an EP on one project at one time. And then we just have a bunch of crew of cool, creative people that make sure the other shows are working and turning out well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have to have a really strong force around you to produce all of the shows that you guys are doing. Did you know when you did Nico that you guys had something special?
Yeah, we all really liked the pilot a lot, and it took a while to get going because, you know, Amazon's a new to this area of producing, you know, content at all, and let alone, like, 6 to 11 kids content. So, it, you know, like any process and development, even with normal networks, sometimes it takes a while to get going, and it between the delivery of the pilot and the starting of the series, there was a pretty long gap. But we all knew we had made something good and something to be proud of. So I'm glad that everybody eventually came to that same conclusion.
Yeah, yeah. I'm very, very excited for you. So congratulations on that. How did it feel to win this Emmy for it?
Oh, it was fun. Like, you know, I've been nominated for a lot of Emmys, maybe, like, I don't know, five Emmy nominations or something, but to win one is way better. And we won some for the studio before, you know, but this one was one where my name was on it, which was cool because I was an EP on it. So I got to go up. I gave the speech, which was fun.
Oh,
I didn't
cool.
think we were going to win, so I was a little drunk, you know, up against DreamWorks shows. And I was like, there's no way we're going to beat DreamWorks. And who knows how it happened.
Yeah.
People liked it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there are a lot of, like, emerging trends and, you know, future developments of the animation industry. And you guys are working with Google Tilt Brush on a couple projects.
Icarus 666 is one we're in production on now. That's with Brendan Small, who's one of the creators of Metalocalypse, for his new project Galacticon, which is like this crazy space opera. And he's about to release the second album. This will be a VR music video for that album, which is, to my knowledge, the first heavy metal virtual reality music video. So
wow.
We shall see. You know, and we did a music video previously using Tilt Brush and the Tilt Brush toolkit called Show It To Me that premiered at South by Southwest. Right now, we haven't released these officially. They're mostly available through film festivals or through art presentations. There's one traveling art show where you can check out Show It To Me. It's also being distributed in China in VR arcades. But I don't know how many people in China listen to this. So.
I'm sure it's millions, Chris. So talk about the Tilt Brush, because I remember it coming out and seeing the video on it, and I was like, oh my God, what is this? Can you describe what the Tilt Brush is and how you as an artist can create?
Yeah, it's great. It'll blow your brains apart. Like, you're inside. There's nothing. You can't really describe it. You have to do it. Like, yeah. You know, it's like you go inside and you're in another world, and anything you could paint with all these different kind of brushes, but they don't adhere to any kind of real world physics. You know, it's like they float in the air, and you paint with fire and all these different colors and do all this crazy stuff. And it's amazing. I mean, it was one of the first things I did in VR, and immediately sought out Drew and Patrick, the guys who created it, and started working with them. And then they got bought by Google, which was great, because then you know, some of the things that we were doing with them, creating art with it, Google was able to pay us to do, which was awesome. It was
that
cool to get paid
awesome.
To do something that you like, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
And I really like that team, and I really like that software. It's amazing. And actually, if it just came out yesterday, or I'm not sure when it came out, recently, I'll say, one of these episodes of Art Attack, which is on Soul Pancake, and it's produced by VR Scout, and you can see me painting in VR, and it has a little voiceover of me talking about what it's like to paint in Tilt Brush, if you want to check that
cool.
out.
The VR world is just, we say it's new, people are still learning and creating in it. What do you see for VR and for animation down the line?
You know, we're really digging in. You know, what I see in general, I mean, there's so many applications for VR, and most of them aren't actually in entertainment. Like, I think it's most, like, a lot, it's like very useful in medical, useful in education and training, and like military training. I did like a flight, like a jet fighter simulation in it. It was cool.
Right.
I realized I would totally crash a jet fighter if I flying one, which is good that you can learn in VR. And travel is great. You know, of course, you probably know that pornography is one of the leading things in that, as it is in many technologies.
Yeah.
But animation, horror is great. Video games, great. Animation and comedy in general is a tough one, because the storytelling is a way different feel. It's got a different structure. So we've been digging in with our stuff. We did a game called Smash Party VR that you can get on Steam. That's free, by the way. It's based on this party that we do where we smash stuff, and that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then, you know, these music videos, but we're not doing anything that's realistic. We're doing everything to make it look like cartoons, to make it look like weird cartoons, because we feel like there's a lot of places that are good at realism and, you know, either shooting real stuff or doing photo real CG, but that's not what we're into. We want to make stuff that looks like crazy cartoon worlds. And I think as far as stories go, what's working for us so far is not so much linear stories and more characters. And some of the stuff we have in development now for VR is very much about hanging out with comedic characters and less about like following a very specific story.
Interesting. As far as like technology, you know, we talk about how, you know, marketing has changed so much because of, you know, the new digital platforms, because of social media, and the way that you produce content can't be on the same on all applications. Can you talk about how or if it's changed the way you create your assets or the campaigns you produce?
Yeah, there's like all sorts of like formats to deliver stuff in now, and it depends. You know, the ad work is the thing that's the most different, because you know, in the TV work now we're having to do some 4K deliveries, which is a little different, but that's like pretty much the same aspect ratio. It's just higher resolution, stuff like that. So that's just like a technical achievement. So that's a pretty thing, you know, there's as long as you just do the right technical stuff, you can deliver that fine. But for the ad stuff, a lot of times now, like, hey, we're going to deliver a 16:9 aspect ratio for, you know, for TV or for many other things, but we need a square aspect ratio for a bunch of social stuff. We need a vertical aspect ratio for people's cell phones and whatnot. So you have to conceive of ideas. It's like, okay, well, going from 16:9 to a square is hard enough, but then going to a full vertical, that's like a wholly different composition. So it's, you know, really thinking about how you're going to maybe even place the camera in a totally different spot for the vertical delivery than you would for the wider screen one. So yeah, there are a lot of different, you know, there's a lot of different ways to deliver stuff now. The good thing is, you know, everything's digital. So it's, you know, it's just setting up your projects correctly and making sure you have the latitude to export it and crop it in all different ways.
Chris, you did the first for Titmouse, which was working on the Nike ad with W&K. Can you talk about that, the Why Not campaign?
And that's one that we had to deliver in a square format as well, and I think different cutdowns. So I think the full cutdown was a 90, and then there was a 60, and then there might have even been shorter ones. Yeah, so the square format is generally for Instagram or whatever. Vine, I guess, doesn't exist anymore, but, you know, things like that. The agency approached us and they had this song and, you know, they had been exploring, designs, but, I guess they weren't happy with them. So they came to us and, you know, Black Dynamite was their point of reference, which is a show that we produced. So,
yeah.
Chase Conley and, Ron Wimberly were both, character designers on Black Dynamite. So we brought them on and they've since, you know, Ron's an amazing comic artist, and Chase has gone on to direct, you know, an animation. So we brought them in to co-direct it, and I think they did an amazing job. They had a very short schedule, so they had to do a lot of drawing, you know. They were very much on the ground directing. Ron doing a lot of character designs, and Chase doing a lot of the posing. And, yeah, we delivered that, like, really under the wire, because that had a very, like, time-sensitive delivery because it was tied to the – you know, the MVP voting.
Right.
So that one couldn't be late, you know?
Yeah. So there's a huge difference doing ads versus doing Adult Swim.
Yeah. I mean, generally with TV shows, you know, it's like a show, you know, we either will sell a show to a network or they'll come to us and hire us to do a show that they need to be produced. And we'll assemble a team. Sometimes the network will have ideas on who should be the team. Sometimes they don't. We have to pitch people, and, you know, we'll write the show in house. We'll cast it. We'll do the records. You know, we'll produce it all the way through and mix it. With ad stuff, it's a lot different. You come in way down the line in a lot of these. You know, sometimes there's already a track. There's already designs. In this case, they had a track only, and we took it from design and direction on. But sometimes they even have a look. Like, if it's a campaign that exists, sometimes they have a look. Like, sometimes we would do spots, you know, that have, like, existing mascot characters for, like, cereal or fast food or something. And it's like, well, that you just use, you know, it's supposed to look like this, and that's the way it's got to look.
Am I going to say this right? Is it anime?
Anime?
Yeah, okay. So it was downtown L.A. a couple weekends ago. Were you at that?
Oh, Anime Expo. Yeah. We did a panel at Anime Expo. Yep.
Now, did you do Toonami? Were you talking
about
Toonami?
Showed a bunch of things. We just showed a bunch of work that we'd done. You know, generally, every year we do a panel, just a general Titmouse panel at Anime Expo, and then it seems to fill up the room every year, so we keep doing it. And we just talk in general about whatever projects we think are cool or our clients have allowed us to talk about at any given time. Like we showed some of the Toonami stuff we're working on. We actually showed some of that Nike spot, the Why Not Zero. We showed some of the behind the scenes, some of the storyboards and designs and rough animation for that. We showed the trailer for Nico. We showed probably other stuff that I can't remember.
Yeah. You know.
But it was good. It's fun. And what we do at that panel is we draw during the course of the panel, and then anyone who asks a question gets an original drawing. So that's fun. And we draw under a camera so everybody can see the drawing.
What are the big conferences or the big talks you give around the country that are most popular for animators or animation?
Comic-Con is a big one, so we'll be doing a big Nico and the Sword of Light panel down at Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, which is very soon. And
yes.
New York Comic-Con is another one that's in October, so we'll have a panel there. This Anime Expo is a good one. Those are like three of the main ones that we do every year. Then there's other ones. I think I'm going to do a workshop at the Future of Storytelling this year. We'll see if we... that hasn't been 100% locked in, but that's like about like VR and other like kind of future, like forward thinking ways of telling stories. It's did a real interesting conference. There's some, it's a lot of conventions. Sometimes the animation festivals, we were at Annecy, which is the world's biggest animation festival, that's in France, and we did some panels there. We did some work with Tiltbrush. We showed a sneak preview
of this
X66 video there and let people try it out. And Annecy's always a real fun one. We premiered a movie there last year, so I like going to Annecy every year. That's a good one. But there's a lot of them. There's like a never, you could get South by Southwest, that was a fun one to go. There's so many of these things, you can't go to all of them.
Yeah. Didn't you show something out at South by Southwest? Was it the...
We premiered a virtual reality video there, the one called Show It to Me. So that was fun.
What was the thought process about creating that video in regards to...
I was doing some live VR painting at last year's VR LA party. And, Tiltbrush had recommended me to the VR Scout guys who had, I'd done this at another VR Scout party before, but they were showcasing their audio reactive brushes at the party. And so I was meant to go on stage and paint with the audio reactive brushes. And I hadn't tried them previously. And that was great, because you have a DJ there and the brushes react to all the waveforms of the audio and dance around and animate. So I thought, this would be great for a music video if only we could edit a bunch of these sequences together. So I cornered one of the engineers from Tiltbrush who happened to be in town at the party, and I was like, man, can you build me an edit timeline for Tiltbrush so we could put a bunch of these in a row? And he's like,
oh, wow.
I think that's possible. And then I happened to be up in San Francisco a week later, and I met with the Tiltbrush. I kind of invited myself over to Google and like we're going to have lunch, and talked to them and got them enthused about it. So they essentially built a toolkit just for us, just for Titmouse to use to make a music video. And it was super useful. And then in building it for us, they actually realized that this is a tool that they could actually release as a tool for people to do music videos or whatever they want. So basically, we were trying to figure out a deadline for our music video that we were using Tiltbrush for, and we submitted to South By and got in, and then we're like, okay, I guess that's our deadline, is to get it done before South by Southwest. So it was good to get into a festival because it forced us to finish the video.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, because the colors are amazing in it. I don't know the terminology, that one of the people on the video for your Tiltbrush on your website, they were talking about, they didn't want to do acrylic, acrylic color, and then now everybody wants to do acrylic, I believe.
I think he was using that as I'm familiar. That's that video that they showed in the New York Times, I think. It was, that artist was talking about how, years ago, when acrylic was first introduced, like people who painted in oils, they weren't used to it, so they didn't want to use it. But now everybody uses it. Who knows what people are going to create with it.
So as an artist, did you find that it was easy to use in that space?
I mean, it's just totally freeing. If anything, it's the most difficult thing about it is it's totally limitless. So you have to like kind of figure out what your own parameters are, because there's very few in there. You can paint all around you and, there doesn't seem to be any lag or any, I haven't been able to trip up the software at all
Wow.
as far as like as far as being it, you know, if you draw too much, it doesn't slow down or prevent you from adding more brush strokes or doing more things. So it's the hardest thing is probably to decide when your piece is finished.
Yeah. A lot of people in you know, design and animation and in our membership, they talk about how from going from a creative to, you know, being an executive, and you have to run this company and, you know, have all these employees and do all the business stuff. How has that transition been for you, and how can you make sure that your creativity doesn't lag behind because you're doing the business of animation?
Well, I'm lucky in that, you know, when we first started, Shannon, you know, coming more from a producing background, did more of that stuff. And then as we've expanded, you know, we've got, you know, accounting departments and a financial officer and an HR department and HR people and IT people and, you know, operations people to, you know, run the buildings and stuff. So it's, as we've expanded, it's been, you know, there's a part in the middle where you're doing a lot of stuff when you're first starting up and you have growing pains and you have to do a lot of that stuff. But I haven't had to do a lot of businessy stuff for a while, other than like pitching and sales work and meeting with the heads of some of the networks. I don't get out into the nitty gritty of like doing budgets or doing schedules. It's good. We have Ben, who's our like COO and our like supervising producer, will do a lot of that stuff. So I don't have to.
Yes. Have you found that, you know, having your own business and having to do marketing, has that changed the way that you look at certain campaigns or things that you take on?
Probably, you know, it probably should more than it does. You know, we still kind of like use our heart a lot more than our brains when we decide what jobs to do.
Yeah, you know? That's great. Not a lot of people can say that.
We argue a lot, you know, I mean, in a constructive way, you know, mostly Antonio, who's our creative director, and Ben, our COO, and myself are often like kind of like debating, I guess is a probably a better word than arguing, about which jobs we should take and which ones you should turn down. And it's always different. Like, it's not always like the same. Like, if we all agree, then that's great. Then it's probably the right decision. It's like, we all agree to turn down this job, then all right, then we're definitely going to do it. But then sometimes, you know, sometimes it's me against both of them. Sometimes it's me teamed up with one of them against the other guy, or who knows what.
Yeah. Well, Chris, so give us again the rundown on Nico and the Sword of Light, when that's premiering, how we can get it, and also what you're doing at Comic-Con.
So there's a big panel at Comic-Con, and it's premiering the 21st. I believe the panel is on the 21st, the day it's premiering, and you need to have Amazon Prime. I think you might be able to watch the first episode free if you know, download the app, or you have a smart TV with Amazon Prime. But if you are an Amazon Prime member, then you could watch the entire season for free.
Well, it's been truly a pleasure to have you on the show, talk about Titmouse. If we want to find out more about Titmouse, how can we follow you? How can we log on? What is that information?
I mean, our Twitter is at Titmouse Inc., like Inc., like incorporated, not Inc., like ink that you draw with. And the website is titmouse.net. We couldn't afford .com. It's true, the guy who won't sell it to us, he wants a lot of money. and he's never put up a website. And he's done it for 20 years and never used it. Anyway, and then my Twitter is just my name, Chris Prynoski, which is Prynoski, and that's probably enough things for someone to want to type in.
Yes, well, president and owner of Titmouse, Chris Prynoski, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. This is awesome.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of The Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate LaCaire-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A, follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack, follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. Subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.